Same thing twice. I was here when the church was being rebuilt after the fire, and the person who was in charge of that rebuilding was named Steve Facey. Did Steve have a title?
Yeah, but I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
Sexton.
Sexton, yeah.
Sexton. Oh, Jimmy. Sexton.
No, Jimmy okay. was the sexton.
Jimmy yeah.
is now, but what was Steve's title? Anyway, he was...
Anyway, Steve was the general organizer of the rebuilding of the church after the fire, and he told me that the walls were plaster, and that as plaster, they absorbed all the sounds of all the poetry that was said in the room.
It's all still here.
So it's pretty amazing, right? So that's what I wanted to say. What was the question? Why was I saying that?
Because what...
Why do you think people come to the project? What are they looking
for
that they don't
yeah.
get at other venues?
Oh, okay. That's what they get.
Plaster.
Yeah.
They get plastered. Are you finished?
Yeah.
I don't have much to add to what Ann says, except that, you know, people who read at universities, who go around and make the university circuit, I think they tend to read this. They go on a tour and they read the same poems, just like rock groups might tend to play the same sets night after night after night. And they're just going around kind of showing off and making money and getting laid, I guess. But here it's very different. This is kind of like a furnace where the work gets forged, or at least, as Anne said, the new work gets read, gets tried out. And I think poets are more willing to take a chance in what they read here than they are when they read at the Y or some other such institution. I mean, you can hear good readings anywhere, in a bar or at the Y, doesn't matter. But the trouble is that about the bar readings is they tend to not go on over history very long. You can't depend on them. And sometimes the logistics are difficult, the acoustics, et cetera. And in the institutions, things get a little on the formal and stuffy and self-satisfied side sometimes. You can hear good readings anywhere, but not consistently over the years the way you can here. I just wanted to add one little detail that I became aware of, or a statistic I became aware of when I was the director, was that, and this was back when I left in 1980, by that time the Poetry Project had presented more poetry readings than any institution in the history of the world. And I remember pointing that out on one of my grant applications to some foundation. They became quite upset by that.
I guess it's sort of a small wave of why people come here. I think of the New Year's audience, and having been officiating at those and kind of sitting and watching the performers and watching the audience. And one of the things that struck me in people who came on New Year's, and it wasn't so different than any other reading here, except that how long that reading is. But people would sit there for hour after hour after hour after hour. And for some people, it was their one shot of poetry for the entire year. They would fill up and not want to come back until next year. But it wasn't so much that people were just there, that there would be, you know, big sort of performance and poetry stars who would come and read. And you would expect people to have really a lot of attention for people who are just very, very skilled at reading poetry to an audience. But then there would be some poet who wasn't so, you know, didn't have so much charisma, and who would be reading something fairly subtle, and there'd be some turn in the work, and I could tell that the audience was on it, and there was response that would ripple through the room. And I think that level of attention is not something that I experience everywhere, and it's you know, I think that you can see readings in bars, but a lot of times you're sort of fighting off the sound of a cash register. And I think that the tradition of this place is having continuing to do readings that people will really listen to. So.
Yeah, I love that it seems like with this question we're all a little in love with the place in some way. You know, I think I can't help thinking that, well, it's weird, the history. I mean, if you worked here, you started to be all about the history because you were looking for money, so you were just trotting out all this stuff all the time. And I am totally moved by the weird fact that this was the site of Peter Stuyvesant's church on his farm. You know, it's just so weird that that space, that church burned down so many times, and that what it would wind up being at this moment in time is like a church for poetry, you know? And, you know, and I think you can't help thinking that there's a necessity to defetishize the space and the institution, because of course the relationship between the church is always a relationship, and the institution would be something next if that relationship were ever severed. But for now, it's not, and it winds up, you know, when I think about going to Nashville and going to the Grand Ole Opry and standing on that stage, like the old one, and standing on that stage and hearing that, like, Elvis Presley performed there in 1954, and going into those, you know, like, dressing rooms and stuff. And I feel like people have that feeling about this space. And, you know, it's like when you see people from out of town come, and they are sort of anticipating the ideal audience of everybody who ever could have come to hear them read. I always want to tell people who won't live in New York, it's like you really have to bring an audience, because, you know, it's sort of like it could be sparse, it could be a rough night, you know. But people are going with that collective memory, and it's very beautiful. And if I think about the really bad readings, particularly when I worked here, I remember having, you know, everybody's always trying to change the nature of the place and bring in some other audience, but there's always a different other. And I remember one night having a fiction writer, two gay men read together, and the fiction writer was somebody who I admired his work, and the poet he read with was a very esteemed gay male poet whose work I didn't like, but they were friends, and it seemed like it would bring an interesting audience, and it did, and it was packed. But the poet was so awful, and he was particularly so awful because he was playing in this room, and I felt like the room felt real. The room is real, and the room felt true, and I felt like my experience of the falseness of this poet's work was just worse than ever in this space. Like, it just couldn't hold a bullshit reading, and it was so good to hear that the room was like kind of pushing the sound out and not taking it in, and it was very beautiful. So I think people come here because it's here, you know.
We had a scheme once. We were to raise money. It was a low point, and we thought we could get the poets would have to pay, but then we would get John Ashbery in the audience, or Alex Katz, or Edwin Denby.
That's,
you know,
a great idea.
Thanks. That's
very briefly. Let me add just very briefly. I didn't really respond to the question very well, and as I was listening to everyone else, I realized what the most true answer I could have given was: what brings people back here decade after decade? And I thought, what brings me back here decade after decade? I don't come to every reading. I probably should, but I live nearby, but I don't come here all the time. But I've come here a lot, believe me, over the last, since it started.
45
years. Yeah, 45 years. That's a lot of readings. And what brings me back here is the fact that there's a higher percentage of great experiences here than there is in any other institution, poetry institution I know of. And by experience, I mean when I come here and listen to a poet, either a poet that I've known for many years and maybe admired, or a young poet that I've just vaguely have some nodding acquaintance with, or someone I never even heard of. That doesn't matter. What really matters is when I come and sit here and I hear work that the room falls away, all my worries fall away, everything falls away, and I just get inside the work, and I find the work wonderful and brilliant, and I just am raised out of my chair. And when I get up and go home, I'm so much happier, more energized and awake and optimistic than I was when I came here. And you don't have that experience all the time at a poetry reading, let's be frank here, but I have it more often here than in any other place I go.
Thanks, Ron. From Anselm, I don't know. The parish hall is this truly great room for listening. That's all I want. The sanctuary looks great in a cavernous way, and it can be fun when packed, but it's not a great place to hear a reading and no fun to host one. But I'm not sure what anyone wants from reading venues. Sociality, a bar, a party, there are places for that. The project has sociality, but it's very compact. Good friends of mine run away from that part of it, though it seems silly to give so much weight to a few people who might try to talk to you. I think it's probably a big mix. People who want to listen to poems go to the project for that, and that's that. Once you figure that out, you're golden. It's a pleasure for my part to only be asked to listen, which is a skill you can only develop on your own with a ton of practice in public and in private. Others go because reading X is happening. Others go because they get told to go, I guess, or maybe they want to do some faux ironic mapping of the social in order to produce some remarks later. Some go because they like to be around the people working there, the environment, the chance to hear a ton of people doing their thing. It can help make you into a stronger writer and give you a sense of belonging. That's still real here, if you don't mind working for it. It's honorable work. Oh, and a lot of poets go because the project is a place where those who have any sense of it read their new work, their untested stuff, the stuff they want to find out about, find out if it's any good. The most boring readings in my time have been the readings by folks going through the motions and reading from their latest book for the 10th time. That lifeless kind of reading that witlessly abuses duration or smugly waves an avant-garde placard. That doesn't happen too often, though. The longer you go to the place, the more likely you are to have a complex relationship with it. You choose which parts of that reality to emphasize. As long as you're not a complete coward, that will keep you coming back. So thanks so much, everyone. Thank you. Everyone here. Thank you. Everyone for coming. So we are over time, and there will be a reading, but let's open it up just for a few questions. If that's all right, Stacy. Two questions. Yeah. Or none.
Salvador Dali gave a talk up at Columbia. The huge Macmillan Theater was called in. The place was packed. And I was very curious to see what he sounded like, would look like. And he gave a very fantastical and kind of funny and weird slideshow talk. And at the end of it, his host came out and thanked Mr. Dali and then turned to the audience, just as we did now, and said, Mr. Dali will take questions from the audience. And there was absolute stone silence. And there was like 1,500 people there. And you think, geez, at least one of them would have a question. And so the silence became, for me, very uncomfortable. And I was sitting down, actually, in the front row. And so just to break the silence and everything, I held up my hand. And like, oh, yes, 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 what's your question? And I said, Mr. Dali, why is there a question and answer period? And he said, because there are no questions.
Thanks.